and I'll check at the end if you might have spoken and don't want that in the recording. I can easily take that out for the sort of public end of it if you need to. So we're big welcome. Breaking Free, that's the name of our seminar tonight. Let's begin sort of more the focusing bit of this call with just a bit of time arriving. So I'll just give us just 1 or 2 minutes just settling in. I'll lead us into that process in a focusing way. If you're new to focusing, that's you're very welcome to the call and just listen and follow the instructions. If you're familiar with it, then follow it in whatever way you want to. We'll just let it go over your head. But we'll just take a little bit of time to arrive. Great. Good. All right. So get yourself comfortable and begin to gather a sense of being in the space you're in. You might look around a little, like I'm doing. I've just been rushing from something else. I'm just arriving myself. So looking, taking in that space and taking in your, begin to take in your body. Maybe just the sense of how it's supported in your place, wherever you are. Maybe you're leaning against something and you can feel it, your back being supported or just beneath you, or your feet maybe touching the ground. However you feel that contact, noticing it and letting it be held. Sometimes we need to remind our body it can, it's okay, it can let go if it wants to. You can have your eyes closed or open. So here we are in this space, your own space, and the kind of land and earth beneath you, and this collective space too, this virtual kind of meeting that our body is also aware of. And noticing inside your body perhaps too, just with the breath, maybe just with your awareness, sensing your belly. And your chest, your heart, the breathing just as it is. And just the flavor of this experience right now, the flavor of how you are right now. Maybe you've got busy thoughts and lots of things crashing in, or maybe it's really quiet, or maybe there's something calling in your physical experience. Maybe it's hard to be present, and all of that is welcome. So you're welcome however you are. So let's just take another half a minute and I'll be silent for that time where, yeah, I invite you just to be curious about how you are. And at the end of that, I'll read a poem. Okay. So taking some time to bring that to a close, and I'll just read a poem as we sort of transition. So it's called Here and Now. Here and Now. The life we refuse will breach our defenses anyway. Even at the moment of death. Don't wait that long. In every moment there is a door with a sign saying now, waiting to be opened. Don't hesitate. Don't even knock. Even when we turn away, we will arrive again at the same place. Every step we take is toward this door. The life we refuse is singing to us from the other side. Step through. The old life with its comforting certainties is not a home for the soul. Break the furniture, run at a door, and leap into the place they call here. So I'll send that poem out to those who want it off at the end of, if you don't know anyone who's registered. Good. So it'll be helpful to know actually who here is new to focusing. Maybe okay, one person, and the people who aren't visual, maybe tap a yes or say a yes or something.
I am Madhurima, and this is my first time here.
Okay, thank you. Great, that's you're very welcome. Anyone who's new, I'm just wanting to, so I know where to pitch the evening. Great. Good. So yeah, our call is all about this topic of breaking free, and focusing. I'm sharing some of the skills from that practice in relation to this whole topic. And of course, you know, if you looked up breaking free on the internet, there'd be thousands of kinds of people saying this is the way, of course. But anyway, I'm offering you what I think has been helpful for me in this realm from focusing. So in a nutshell, I'll just say something. Focusing is a practice of listening to your body, listening to your bodily knowing. Maybe that's a bit better way of saying it. Listen to your bodily knowing. This, and we often feel that physically, but it may not be. It's just a sense we have of, oh, this particular thing fits and this thing doesn't. That's a very everyday example is, you know, maybe you're trying to describe something to someone and they say, oh, is it like this? And the word really fits and your body goes, yes. You know, that's that feeling of there's some knowing in there. And that might seem very everyday, but it points to a much deeper sort of, almost kind of a much deeper kind of more, I don't know, more mysterious truth that the body knows much more than our kind of prefrontal cortex, you know, our kind of more conscious mind. There's all this kind of knowledge and knowing that we often don't tap into. So focusing is the art of listening to that, and you can do it alone and you can do it in partnership. You can apply in all sorts of different situations. It gets mixed in with therapy and dance practice and creativity. And so it's a very mixable thing. That's one of the reasons why I like about it. And it's also very egalitarian. Everybody can do it. You know, once you learn the process, you can do it with anyone else who knows it. I like that. So that's just a little nutshell of about focusing. So it gives you a little bit of background. And yeah, and it's great. I suppose one of its gifts is its application in these stuck places in our life. And that's what we're going to look at. We're going to look at kind of something about these stuck places and we're going to look at different kinds of parts of us, different aspects of us that show up in these stuck places. And we're going to look at some capacities or some powers we have to deal with to meet those places tonight. So we're going to, cover some territory around different parts and different powers, how to meet it. And this is all this material is a kind of very condensed version, and not even all of it, of a course I'm leading later in the year, and kind of just in pretty much influences all the way I teach focusing throughout, really. Yeah. So I've got a question to begin with to gather from you, and you can either chat this or just say it. And I'm hoping this question will work. But I'd just like to gather some, just like naming, let's name some places we get stuck in our life. So where do you get stuck in your life? You could write or tap anything you like. Don't just split in a nutshell. Like it could be like relationship issues or, I don't know, procrastination, or just some examples. Food, thank you, brilliant. So yeah, exactly. Work, right? So types of areas, careers, yeah, exactly. Any other life direction? Yep. I'm going to put something up. Transitions, yeah. Habits. We'll come back to that. Health, yeah. Feelings, yeah, that's right. Clarifying values, thank you. Thought patterns. When things get too complex, yeah, exactly, thank you. Great. We've got a massive, massive amount of subjects already. So lots of, I'm sure there's more, but lots of areas, many areas where we get stuck. It's like there are areas, I'm sure there are areas of all our life where it's flowing more easily. Where it's like, yeah, I'm fine in my relationship and work, but in like there's something around food or there's something around health where it's just tangled. It doesn't flow. It's stuck in some way. Yeah? And this is where focusing can shine a light, you know, in those stuck areas, very often what happens, oh, someone put fear, exactly, yeah, fear. One of the ways, just very simply, what happens, I usually have an image for this, but basically if you can imagine like a, actually I have got one, wait there. Oh yeah, this is what, the little visual image of what those stuck areas look like. Can you see that? A ball of tangled things. This is just like all the different thoughts and feelings we have about it. You know, it's just like, and we never really get anywhere with it. No matter what you pull, it just makes it worse. Or you talk about it with somebody and it never goes away. And you read loads of books about it and still it remains at this level. So this is a visual for some areas of our life. Some areas, like you say, are flowing. So this is what we're exploring. You know, typical kind of elements of these stuck places are, is some kind of, something's blocked, something isn't flowing, like a blocked, you want to do something and you're not doing it. Or the opposite is you're doing too much of something. You're compulsive around something. It's like you're caught in a, I can't stop. Or avoidance, you know, that's another kind of very typical kind of pattern around this kind of thing, or holding back. What we label self-sabotage, resistance, all these kinds of areas that people have mentioned have that probably those kinds of things going on in it, in this not free place. This, I'm going to call this a tangle from now onwards, just to give it a name. It's a tangle. Yeah. Maybe I'll give an example of a tangle, and then I'll have some questions. So I want to take my own example of this I'm working on at the moment is around what something in me labels addiction. I can call it compulsions. But at the moment, I find myself watching rather a lot of Netflix, or it could be any other provider of such a thing. Right? It doesn't really matter what it might be. And I'm like, I'm staying up late at night, and I'm like, oh, I can't wait. I can watch it later, and I feel compelled. Something in me takes over, even when I go, no, I won't watch another one. Just another 5 minutes, and then an hour's gone. So there's something happening there, right? What we generally label those compulsions or addictions. So I want to take that as our example of a stuck place, and it could be many of these other things you've said. But I think this is a good one, and it's live, and I'm hoping you can relate to it. So I'm going to read two sentences. I'm going to sort of share with you two ways of framing this kind of thing, and I'm inviting you to sense the difference. I'm going to say it to you in two different ways, and just feel the difference. So the first way you might frame that kind of stuck area is like, I'm addicted to Netflix. Let's say I'm addicted to Netflix. I can't stop watching Netflix. That's how you might normally talk about it and present it. I'm addicted. Well, it could be whatever it is. I'm addicted to eating late at night or something. So hear that sentence and then listen to this. Something in me watches Netflix, and something in me doesn't want to. But something in me watches Netflix, and something in me doesn't want to, or doesn't want me to. So hear the difference. I'll say them again. So I'm addicted to Netflix. And then almost take it into your body, even if it's not your issue. Listen to the difference. So I'm addicted to Netflix. And then something in me watches Netflix. And something else in me doesn't want me to. Always critical of that. Something else in me doesn't want me to. And I'm just curious how it lands with you, and if you hear a difference, and if it makes sense. And so any questions, this isn't a point for questions, really. I'm going to just write that door down also. Framing it a bit differently in my words, or saying it differently. I think saying it more truthfully. I'm kind of frame it near. So something in me watches Netflix, and something else in me thinks that's bad. Put it a bit more how it arrives in me. So just pausing there. What do you notice in that those sentences, and what's the feel of them? And just, a little bit of, you can chat and you can speak. Just curious if you can feel the difference between the two and what that might be. Right, yeah. The first one has a flavor to it, doesn't it, right? Yeah, exactly. First one feels like self-sabotaging, everyone can see that. So it's like, it's kind of, it's embedded in it as a kind of critical judgment of my experience. Yep. The second one feels, empathetic, exactly. The second one has a sort of something more in it. The first one we are fused to that identity, exactly. Yeah, I I'm completely like that's defining me. I'm addicted to. Yeah. And someone here, something in me watches. Yeah, exactly. Something in me. So there's curiosity. Yeah, the first one, someone's saying here, first one feels like it's like it comes with this sense of flawed or inherently bad. I mean, the whole language of addiction is tricky, isn't it? It's tricky. The second one, there is a chance of dialogue. Exactly, yeah. The second one, there's a chance of being in touch with something in me that does that. The first one, it's harder. I wouldn't say you wouldn't be able to, but it's kind of like a, I'm addicted to Netflix, bam. Great. So this is so, thank you for everyone. That's great. That's right. So there's even someone, this is someone who's very used to focusing, I think. Something sounds odd to me. Yeah, so maybe the language doesn't work. So I'm going to give you a visual for it, which hopefully will work. Well, it's important to it. In a way, the words, the words might take us to the place, but the place is one of exactly empathic relationship with the parts of us that are involved in this battle. So what we're involved with in a compulsion is a battle between at least two parts any tangle is some kind of inner war between at least two parts. But in this case, I've got something in me. This is one part. Something in me that watches Netflix, and something in me like you should stop doing this. It's terrible. Another part of me, something else in me, like judging and like you're just addicted. If you don't stop doing this, you'll never get anything done. You know, has a lot to say. I often have a lot to say about what this one is doing. So whether the language gets to it or the image, if you like, it's like not identifying, as somebody put, unfusing the identity with these two parts in this tangle. There's a part of me that watches and a part of me that thinks that's not okay. Or this place in me. So we're not one thing or the other. It's an and, exactly. We're at least two parts. So this is a crucial moment. And then we can listen. Then we can listen to what's deeper beneath these parts of me. I can listen to why this part of me wants to watch Netflix. Well, there might be many reasons. It might be because it's a great TV show. I love it. Or like, no, I don't really want to experience something. There might be more underneath that. Yeah, but then this one is like, it's worried. Worried, I'm worried you'll never stop doing it. So you can hear, so this movement to sort of disidentifying, this is a visual for it, gives us that space where we can then listen to its story. And then something can move in this tangle differently. Yeah. So just pausing there. It may help to see them as persons, yeah. Rather than some things, do you mean? Yeah. So we'll come on. It'll make more sense. There's a couple of comments coming that I will. Hopefully, the next bit will make sense of. So just to draw out a nice opposite to this, so a compulsion is a battle between two parts, something in us that does something and something in us that doesn't want us to. And the one that's doing it is winning in this current state of affairs, including for me. The opposite would be something that's blocked, like you want to make some change in your life, maybe around health or exercise or creativity, and I want to write a book, but I never do, or I want to get more healthy and start running, I want to do my yoga practice, I want to grow vegetables, but it never happens. That's just, in a way, it's just a flip side. But who's in charge there is the something in you that doesn't want to do it. I don't want to do it. And that's winning. Maybe it's this one. I don't want to, I'm not doing it. When I take my dog for a walk and she doesn't want to go anywhere, it's pretty hard to get her to move. She's like, her heels are dug in. I'm like, I'm not going there. So that in any blocked part of our life, that's one's winning, right? And then something else is like, come on, get moving, and pushing it. So it's just the opposite battle. So there's a question here. Could it be due we are forgetting relationship with other things in life? Well, yeah, that could be part of the whole picture. Yeah. That could be part of it. So does that make sense? There's two opposites, compulsions and action blocks. It's like swapping the places, really, just wherever everyone's winning. Great. So we have an inner war between two parts. So now I want to just say a little bit about these parts. And I'm going to talk about two parts. Of the tangle. Now, in a tangle, there are three parts, at least. But three main kinds of parts, let's just say like that, three main kinds of parts. And this work really is based on the work of Annalisa Cornell and Barbara McGavin, for those of you who know those folks and teachers. And they're very experientially based work. They call it untangling now. But it bears resemblance to other methods you might come across. You know, if you come, internal family systems is another three-part system, the drama triangle, for those who know that, I think it touches on this. It's not the same, but I think it draws on something similar. But I want to talk about two parts in a tangle, and two parts are in the war. So the first kind of part is this. This is what we generally call a critic. In their system, they call it protector. It's slightly, you'll see why it's slightly confusing language, but anyway, let's call it a critical part. So these are the parts that we experience as talking to us. Yeah, like they say, you should do this. If you hear any like that very phrase, you should or you shouldn't be, or you, if anything is using you, you've almost definitely got a critical part of you in your mind coming in a focusing process, you know, or in just life, you know, like you should do this. So have lots of words, you know, they put you down, you're terrible, you shouldn't watch so much Netflix. You should be going out saving the world. You know, there's a lot to talk about. No one else does it. Look at that amazing activist in town. She never watches Netflix. You're pathetic because you. So they might start getting harsh of you. So that's typically how they appear. But also, really interestingly, there's another kind of critic, which isn't really a critic, but another kind of part like this, which is reassuring. So see if you recognize this voice. Maybe I'll pull out another animal for this. This is the one that says, oh, everybody else does it. Oh, everybody watches Netflix. It's fine. Do you ever have that kind of voice? Oh, it's okay. Just a drink or two. Who it matter? So this is reassuring. But I like I've got a teddy bear for it, Rich. So this is a part of you that's kind of, well, it's speaking to you. It's kind of cajoling you into doing something. So anyway, I just thought I'd allude to that. I find it very interesting. So not all critics in this system are harsh. Sometimes they use kind voices, but in a way they're not necessarily, don't always have your best interests at heart. And then we often feel these things as voices, right? Look how I describe it. It feels like a voice, like outside of us or up here, or like thoughts. That's very much how we experience this in our life and in focusing. And the last interesting thing to say about them is they don't really have much control over our life. By that I mean they are different from the part of you that actually goes and watches Netflix. They don't, this is, my teacher puts it like this, they don't have the keys to your body. These parts of us have a lot to say, but they're not really, they're different from the part of you that actually goes and does it. They don't really, they don't get in the driving seat. They just make a lot of noise about what's going on. So they talk a lot. Oh, you should, or you shouldn't do this, and it's not good, and it's dangerous, and all these things they end up saying. You know, it can be very painful to be surrounded by these things. So, yeah. That's what we call a critical part. and just share a little insight I've had many times as a parent. I've got an 8-year-old boy. And I find myself saying things just like these voices. But if you don't do that, that's not a good thing to do, and you shouldn't do this. And I didn't say it much, right? But I do say it, and I'm like, oh, I'm trying to control this person through words. I'm trying to control their experience through saying a lot. So these critics are internalized processes like that, I think. That's my sense of it. You know, it's internalized parental caregivers, all those word voices that we carry with us from before. They didn't have much power in a way, but they do have a lot of say. They do talk a lot, and we can feel bad. You know, they can make us feel bad. That's true. Because it's not really nice to be attacked by this part of us. We can get, it's painful. So that was critical parts. Maybe I'll say the next part, and then we'll have some questions. So that's one part. So then we have this part. This is the part that watches Netflix. So this is what I call a safety guardian. Notice the language, I like that. Safety guardian. You could call it the addicted one or the compulsive one or something. But anyway, I'm going to call it a safety guardian. And in Anne and Barbara's methodology, they call it the defender. So I find that confusing because defending is similar to protecting. So I'm calling it a safety guardian. So this part of us is the one that goes and switches on the remote, switches on the TV, presses next episode, Although, actually, must admit, Netflix don't make it very easy for us, right? Because, you know, they just feed you this stuff. So its job is to keep me away from something that it feels it doesn't want me to feel. It's too much for me. It turns me away from experiencing myself in some way. So its job is to keep us safe. You know, they're like guards or they're gatekeepers. And they do that by, yeah, doing all sorts of different behaviors. They take us to distraction, to constantly being busy, to numbing out, you know, but basically like numbing behaviors or behaviors that never leave any space for experience. That's what they're great at. They love doing that, you know. So they have the keys, right? They have the keys to the body. And this is what, when these come, it feels like you're hijacked. This is the language you could use. It's like, no, I definitely won't watch anything tonight. I'm going to go and read my really worthy ecology book. I'm going to go upstairs. It's like, oh, what am I doing? I'm just watching Netflix again. So I just get hijacked. Anyway, I'm using my version. It could be whatever your version is. Yeah? We feel like we get hijacked by these parts of it. So I'm definitely not going to argue with someone, that person. I'm going to meet them tomorrow at the office. I'm not going to get frustrated. And then, brah, you know, we're taken over by it. Even if we don't express it, we just, yeah. So this, so it's these what I call safety guardians, they're trying to get us to experience something or not experience something. Funnily enough, their job is to get us to experience something or not experience something. So it's very, it's kind of protective in that way. It's why it's confusing, the language, but it's sort of. So there's these two kinds of parts: critics and safety guardians. And in a battle of addiction, the one that's winning is a safety guardian that doesn't want you to feel something or wants you to feel something over and over and over and over again, numb or distracted. And the one that's not winning is a critical part that's saying, stop doing that. You must stop doing that. It's you're a bad person. You're in your life. Anyway, I'll pause there because that's just a little opening up that tangle of mine. And so I'm really open to any questions about this topic now around these two parts. I'm going to talk in a minute about how we get into relationship with them, how do we meet them. But yeah. For now, I just really wanted to check it makes sense. And then, or like, I don't know, I don't get it. What about this? Please, I welcome all those kinds of questions. Yeah, someone's commented, it's like a control of the second part. Yeah, the second part is this part, or which part we maybe went away, but they're both in a way trying to control one's experience. So one of them is very good at it, one of them isn't. But the one that's watching Netflix can actually get in the driver's seat and take you a place. The one that's talking about it, it just has a lot to say about it. It makes you feel bad about it. In a way, they both have a similar kind of, it's all about not experiencing what's at the heart of the tangle, yeah, which is what they're trying to keep you away from. Yeah, which is something we don't know what it is yet. So these two are always kind of on the outside of any tangle. And you can see that just kind of revolving around, or kind of as part of it. But in the middle, there's something else, another part, which I've not spoken about yet. But I just want to check on these. Yeah, I don't know. Well, sometimes, but this is a theory given to me, and I just think it fits. I don't know quite why it turns out like this. I think it is to do with how we live our life as a person and as a child and a baby, is that we do have parts around us called adults that do say a lot about, do try and control us through speaking and through criticizing and through judging. And that's one element of our experience. And then we also have an inner part of us that can take us places. It has kind of agency, and it can, like, it can say no or angry, or I'm going here, or, you know, it can have some agency that it uses, something like that. I'm sure there's more to what I've just said, but that's some sense of it. So many of our wars have these two parts involved. Wars of avoidance, wars of procrastination, addiction, compulsions. Any questions? You can chat or you can type.
But why is the critic always considered to be the not so good part while it may be actually saving us?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my, that's a good question. I'm hoping I'm not, I mean, that's why the language of critic is tricky, because, and why I've still yet to find a, why Anne calls them protectors. You know, they are, both of these are really valuable. You know, they're both like completely welcome, and we're, and this one isn't good or this one isn't bad. Like, they're both actually integral parts of a tangle and very welcome. So one, yeah, I hope that answers some of it. The way we label them often isn't so good, right? We label this one a critic and we label this one resistance. And so we don't, and even in that, that's actually a part of us that labels it like that. And then in that labeling, we become less interested in them and they just fade away. This way, we just like, oh, no, they're out of awareness completely. Like, oh. So yeah, we don't want to make these parts bad. Definitely. So thanks. Good. That's a great question. But often in normal, if there is such a thing, but in, you know, most conversations, people treat their critical parts as if it's like a part they want to get rid of. Like, if I could just get rid of my inner critic, then everything would be all right. Or if only I could overcome this part of me that wants to watch Netflix, then everything will be okay. I mean, no. If that works for you, then that's great. It just hasn't worked for me. They come back, even if they're like, right, I'm not going to watch Netflix for a week. And then at the end of the week, I'm like absolutely gagging to watch something. Like, I didn't work with it. So, you know, like, it doesn't always work, these parts, these plans. Yeah, the more one tries to get out of a part, the more one gets fused with it, possibly. Wondering if that... Maybe I'll move that... I might speak to that in the next piece, Rambabu. Because it's about how we are with these parts. But yeah, we definitely, these are not, we're not making enemies of these, and somehow in explaining it, it can look a bit like that. But any other questions? Do you want to ask? Should I unmute you? Yeah.
For instance, when you are hijacked and you lose the mindfulness,
uh-huh,
how can you then manage that state of compulsivity?
Well, yeah. We find some way of getting curious about it. We find some way of getting curious about it. And often in that moment, once we're hijacked, it's kind of hard. We've already been taken over by a part of us. Here we are doing the thing. And it's like, and we can even watch ourselves doing it. You know, I'm sure you might have had this experience. It's like you're watching yourself. Okay. Oh, I'm doing it again. And you're still doing it, right? That might not be the easiest moment to bring awareness to. But then later it's like, oh, I wonder what that was like. I wonder what happened there. Can I bring some curiosity, some empathy? So that part of me that did that, or can I bring some empathy and curiosity to the part of me that's saying, no, you shouldn't do that? That's probably where we would start. So in the moment, it may not be so easy. So we catch it afterwards and then we explore it in some kind of focusing way or empathic way. There's more I could say about it really, but that's a simple answer. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's about acceptance, exactly. Accepting that these parts are here, and if we can't accept these parts are here, then we have something else. So we may have another part of us that's judging all of this. So I've got a third animal. Here we go. Look, I don't have enough hands for this. So, but you know, you might have a third part of you that's like, oh my God, it's so terrible. You know, you're so tangled up. You're so messed up. You must be something deeply wrong with you, for example. So we have to accept, like I said, we turn towards all the voices in the tang. This is why it's so tangled. We have layers of judgment. So yeah, in a way, it's acceptance. But also, we might find ourselves thinking, "I didn't like that critical voice of mine." Oh, right, that's another part of me. Hates that critic. Hates that judge. Well, that's here too. So we got that. You could call these guests. For those who know Rumi's poem, "The Guest House." Look it up if you don't know it. So he likens a human being to being a guest house, and all these things are guests. The shame, you know, shame is often really deeply part of a tangle. We have a lot of part of ourselves, deep shame about it. And then it's like, you shouldn't have this, and then, but I can't help it. And it, you know, so, yeah.
So what's the next step to acceptance? Like, yes, you acknowledge there's one part, but still you go ahead with your addictive behaviors.
Yeah. Well, exactly, it's a good question. While you're working on it, it's likely that it will be going on, right? And just to be kind and non-judgmental, you know, not harsh with yourself. Like, give yourself a bit of slack, right? This thing might have been there years. So just knowing that there's a problem and knowing there are parts won't solve it, but that's just beginning. And find some way, however you do that. Now, focusing works for me. So in your focusing time, begin to explore these parts, begin to meet them, begin to sense them directly and really hear them. I mean, you know, there's a whole lot to this kind of process, but finding some way where we can be curious about what's going on, these different parts of us. And, you know, at the same time, we still might be compelled. Now, and that's not to say we might also need to, I mean, there are lots of ways of dealing with addictions and compulsions, and I'm talking about ones that maybe aren't so damaging to the body. So if you know, other ones might be, some part of you might have to take a bit of a sterner hand. I don't know, I've never had something like that, but something where substances are really hurting you, then yeah, you might need support on other mechanisms around you to really help with that addiction. And I really respect and honor those processes, and they can be really helpful too. So that's also, just to put that in, you know, we might need some extra help and be around other people who are working through the same processes. So that might also really support your capacity to set a boundary. That can be really helpful sometimes. So I'm not discounting all of that stuff and saying that's not only focusing helps, but like the focusing, understanding the dynamics within, I think really help. I'm not sure if that answered your question. Yeah, it was about finding a way to meet these parts. So yeah, let's say a little bit more about that. Would that be okay? Just to, how do we meet them? Well, you know, in normal life, like I say, we try and get rid of them, don't we? We often, our attitude towards these parts of ourselves, these critical thoughts, or this part of ourselves that's you know, it's like, oh, I just push my critic away. If you just look up inner critic on Google Image, you get all these images of things being crushed and banished and thrown in jail, and it's terrible. It's like war. It is like battlefield, right? So let's not do that, because they don't go, one, that doesn't work, and two, they don't like it. So yeah, we can begin to be curious. Oh, what's that? What's going on there? What's that like? You know, can I meet it with curiosity? Now, that's quite a big step to even do that with a critical voice. I really don't say that always that's easy, but what I've noticed eventually is that what happens in that process is we notice that it's worried. Any critical part of us is worried or scared. Sometimes they even say what they're worried about. You look stupid in that. Oh, right. Something. He's really worried. I'll look stupid. Don't say it. You know, they'll think you're ridiculous. Oh, right. I'm noticing a part of you that's worried I'll look ridiculous. So they even tell you what they're worried about sometimes. That's great. You've got some information there if you have that happening. Sometimes it's not like that. But yeah, that process of just outlined very quickly, you know, over a period of sessions or months or however long it might take, come into some empathic relationship with it. Yeah. Using that language or using what that language points to, something in me, some part of me, or just, right, it's not all of me, it's a part of me. So this is a power, what in my course we're going to call the power of presence. This capacity to be with anything, with empathy. Just putting that up here. That's one of the powers we've got, one of our skills we'll be learning. Presence, to have presence, to be with anything with empathy. So that's one of four different, at least four, actually some kind of, well, last time we had four powers, but there's several skills we can take to these parts. That's one of them. The other one is this another power, which is a kind of elaboration of it. It's called and. So in other words, including all the different parts of you. I'm noticing some part of me that's addicted. Sorry, really wants to watch Netflix. Something else for me. And I'm noticing something else in me. So it's just that inclusiveness of doing it. And there's something in me judging it. And there's another part of me that's fed up with it. So you just keep noticing. Maybe the third power we have is deep empathy. So deep empathy is our capacity to really be empathic. So this is, say, we're now exploring this part of us who watches Netflix. So I was doing this recently on a retreat, being with this part of me, and I'll tell you where I've got to it with it, because I'm still midway through this process. But you know, when I really sat with it, and it's like, and it said to me in no uncertain terms, it says, "I don't want you to feel all that shit." I was like, "Oh, okay," and it was very, very. Like adamant, it didn't want me to feel something that was really it. What it thought was shit. I was like, okay, so you listen to it just as it is, give it some empathy, like, yeah, okay. So deep empathy, I love this, you know, really hearing its heart wish, and underneath that, what it says there'll be more it wants to say. Like, it really doesn't want me to feel something. Already knowing that changes it massively. You know, I can feel it now as I say it, like, wow, no wonder you're really into this, you really don't want me to feel something. It's really hard for me. Okay. So parts want something for us. That's really fascinating. They want something for us. So they're working on, they're on our side. This is the other thing about it. You'll be able to discover they're kind of on your side, even though they've got very limited information. That's what makes it hard. In their very limited way, they're trying to save your life. You know, they're trying to, I think that's what someone else mentioned earlier about the critical part. It's trying to do something for you. It's trying to, yeah. So deep empathy. That's one of our other powers we have. And when these parts feel fully met and heard, then something changes. Something definitely shifts. You know, big patterns can shift. Now I'm working on this particular one right now that anyway hasn't shifted yet. I'm still quite involved in the behavior and there's still lots of places to be with, but other things I've experienced, like I don't get many critical voices, harsh ones anymore. A lot of that process, that part of me that thought there was something terribly wrong with me, I just don't have anymore because of this process. Or a lot of obsessive thoughts, I used to get a lot of painful obsessive and intrusive thoughts. A lot of that's like gone down, like 99% or something since doing this process. It took me a long time to do that, by the way, but it worked. You know, I'm just saying, big things can shift over time. The parts are like little, yeah, great. The parts are like little children. Yeah, exactly. They don't know. They're just doing what they can with very limited information. They're doing their best. Yeah, so we just need listening. We need empathy. They need our care, our interest, our curiosity. Okay, any questions? And please ask if something doesn't make sense, or like, but what about this situation? I mean, yeah, I'm just very open to those things too.
No question.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah.
Okay. I have a client. I'm working as a counselor.
Okay.
And it was similar situation as the previous person said.
Yeah.
That a client said that he is aware of his drinking problem.
Yeah.
At which point is going to change.
Yeah.
So the awareness is there. It's such a coping mechanism, such an ingrained way of coping with issues that where is that point where he can shift and change?
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite tricky for me, how I can support him through that process. Whilst we have explored different parts of him, and he's very aware of these little parts in him, but the change doesn't happen, and we've been working for about 6-7 months already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it should. I mean, these are very deeply ingrained patterns, some of them, and not going to shift overnight. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, there's details that I don't know that will be hard to say without speaking generally, really. But there may be, there may be. Often in a tangle, we have hidden parts that aren't really very in awareness. Judges or parts of us are like are really impatient with us, or desperate, And or maybe what's under there is quite deep trauma. And in a way, some part of them doesn't want to go there yet. let's bring that out. Very often at the heart of a tangle is something that's traumatic, been experienced, or some bit of experience that is kind of locked in there. And all these parts, their job is just to keep us away from that. It's like you keep the organism safe, from that material. So yeah, it's no wonder it tries so hard. Now, I'm not saying you explain that to that person like this. I'm explaining it to you like this. But then we, over time and with all sorts of different methods, we create a safe enough place where that can be unpacked, where you can begin to slowly give space to all the different elements and the kind of the heart of it will. And we can kind of almost, sometimes we even know there's something, in there already, we know there's something in our past that we need to look at, but just knowing it doesn't make a difference, does it? We need to get to the direct experience and really meet it. And that can take a long time. I like this thing that I'm dealing with, Netflix, it's kind of light in a way, but actually, I remember like being 8 or 9 or like television was just the way I coped with my crappy house, my situation I grew up in. So there's a lot of pain that I'm avoiding in that. Oh, that's a loaded language, but part of me doesn't want me to feel a lot of that stuff. So, it's very ingrained and socially sanctioned. A lot of these things are like, yeah, that's fine. Everyone's addicted to their mobile phones and Netflix. No problem. That's what part of me likes to say. But there's something there, right? Something underneath it. So very often, so that might be another reason why it's hard to get to. It's because there's a lot of us really invested in not experiencing it for good reason, for very good reason. So we need to be really gentle, careful. Great. What does having no parts look like? I love that question. Or one whole integrated part. Is it even a possibility? I think that there is. I mean, I haven't a name for this, but I think. I mean, Anne and Barbara call it self in presence in their model. Self in presence. I don't. It's just being self. It's being grown up. It's being adult. Like, these are all the words we use for it normally. It's being whole. It's being, just like you acting in the world without too many complications that really. I think I have parts of my day when there are no parts present. I'm just me doing stuff. I think that's, and I think you have that too. I don't think it's like I'm special. I think you have that too. You will have it. And so I think that can grow. My sense is that can grow. Oh, here we go. Look, who is that listening to parts? Yeah, it's you, your true selves. Yeah, you could call it that. I don't have a name for it, but you could, I just call it you or me. But what I mean by that is big me, like that which can really meet, you know, and it's big actually when you, I mean, it's a really interesting question. I would invite you to be curious about it. Other modalities have names for this. We call it witness consciousness or the witness or big self or Buddha or Jesus. I don't know what we might call it, but I think that it's something, those things are pointing to this amazing capacity we have to meet experience without judgment. So I'm just catching up on a question, sorry. So does some of the relaxation meditation practices help in this process? Yeah, it might well do, depending on what you're doing. Absolutely. Yeah. Depends on what you do. It could really help you to, what it might help you to do is inhabit that bigger self. So another question here, does empathy and curiosity lead you to the space where negotiation becomes all the more challenging? Yeah, I don't know if I've experienced it like that. For me, curiosity always opens things up. It never makes you more stuck. But that's me. I mean, you can always be curious about something. That's how I've experienced. Even if it's, I'm curious about, I really don't want to look at this at all. I don't like it. Oh, right. I'm curious about that.
I mean, you empathize with both the parts so much that there's no chance of negotiation.
There's no chance of negotiation. Do you mean like try?
You empathize with both parts so much that you get stuck with that empathy with those two parts.
Yeah, right. Okay. I think when something feels really met, when a part of us feels really met, it basically dissolves. I mean, I don't know rough way of describing it. Like when you don't really need a part, parts aren't permanent. This is another thing, important thing to say. Parts aren't permanent in this model. So there isn't, I don't think there's such a thing as like an inner critic, that some permanent part of you is like always hovering over you like some kind of superpower. Like they arise in the moment. I'm sure you've noticed this experientially. You know, you're fine, and then you go to a party, and then suddenly like you have this voice saying, oh my God, you look ridiculous. Everybody's staring at you. It's like, it comes into being, you know. Oh, okay. So then there's, you have something to work with, either there or later. And it may be different, or maybe very similar to one that's been there all your life. But being with it in the moment will begin to bring curiosity to it. It will feel heard, and when it feels heard, something changes. So yeah, so I've not experienced it like I get more stuck. Empathy doesn't bring me to more stuckness.
I haven't experienced it. It's just a logical question.
Yeah, sure. No, thank you for the question. Yeah. But maybe it does allude to something, which is, let me try and articulate it. And I can't right now, but it's something about, sometimes we think if we go towards these parts, we'll make them worse. I'm not, maybe that's not what you're saying, but some people think, well, if I go and get in touch with that part of me that's addicted, then it'll get worse. Or that anger or that feeling, we'll think we'll get overtaken by it. But we're not really letting ourselves get lost in it. We're just meeting it differently. This meeting, right. It's so different from just letting ourselves get merged with it. It's something quite different goes on. So some more comments. I think Eckhart Tolle talks about this very possibly. I've not that, I mean, I know of his work and I've never listened to it in detail, but yeah, I think that's right. I listened to it might have been his story, or it could have been Byron Katie or someone like that. And they're like, they you know, their kind of enlightenment moment is when they go, I can't stand being like this. And then they go, oh, who is it that's saying that? You know, bam, and it's just instant awakening. They realize there's something watching, like this process. You know, for most of us, it doesn't work like that, right? we have that thought and nothing happens next, but it points to the big eye, you know, this big it's not managing the parts exactly, it's unraveling the parts and freeing them in the process exactly. We're not trying to manage them, and this is very often I see people do this. They're like, they go into focusing process and they go, I've got a sad part in me and I'm wondering how I can make it go away. Can you hear how there might be another part of them there? Another part of them that's like, that's not really going to be listening, is it? And that's another part of them that's hidden. Like, how can I make this part go of me go away? Like, it's not going to feel heard or met in that situation. It's going to be like, well, I'm not welcome. So often, it's a very radical and deep thing to do, get into deep empathy with a part. It's not just understanding from my head. There's a very profound and lovely movement that happens when you really finally hear what a part is worried about or longing for you or holding for you or wishing for you. Like, it's just wow. It takes time to get there. It's a lovely moment when it happens. So yeah, I like that. Unraveling the parts and freeing them in the process. Exactly, yeah. They become something frees, you know. Ooh. So, any more questions at this moment? Okay, good. I want to tell you a little bit about the course I'm doing, just to give you a flavor of that course, and then we'll end with a little bit of space and this poem by Rumi, the guest house. So even if you've heard it 100 times, it's still worth hearing, because it really speaks to this process. But yeah, so I'm in September the 11th. I have a 12-week course starting, so it's a 12-week closed group course. So I've really set this up as I call it, a deep dive into focusing. So it's called No Holding Back. So that's my framing of this process. Like, I guess that's how I experience it a lot of myself, is I find myself holding back from whatever it might be, acting in real fullness and showing my love and delight and my passions. It's always often I feel it as holding back. That's just another way of talking about a tangle, really. So the course is about unpacking these tangles. So we look at the different parts of a tangle, including this critical part, including this, the part of the guardian. We look at the third part I'm talking about. We look at the different powers, power of presence, the power of and, the power of deep empathy. When we look at different areas where we find treasure in these parts, or different areas in our life, like guilt, like shame, like grief, you know, these big difficult areas where we can take this kind of empathic awareness and find treasure there. There's in these stuck places, there's real treasure. And you get to work on a theme that whole 12 weeks, so you can take a project and really explore it. I really enjoyed it last year, and it's great to have that continued. It's nearly 3 months, so you can really begin to go deeper with the process over that time. And you're working mainly, it's on Zoom like this, and you're working in partnerships. So we have time, tuition time, and we have partnership time, we have demonstrations, a demo with people. So you can get to work with me sometimes too. You get handouts. That's something about that course. That is for people who know focusing already. You don't have to know much, the basics, and they can even, or someone else, or you could find a way of learning that between now and September. You could even do it one-to-one with me or other focusing teachers. So learn the basics and come on that course. So that's then, and I also have an introductory course. So if you do want to just kind of learn the basics, then that's also happening in September, later in the month, 23rd, I think it's the 23rd or 24th of September. Anyway, it's on my website. So that's like an intro to focusing partnerships. The early bird rate for that No Holding Back course is ending at the end of July. So it goes up by about £40. So just so you know that's happening. And I'll send this information out tomorrow as well. Just so you get that. But maybe there's a, you know, maybe there's a, if there's a takeaway from this course, it's about, you know, look, find, there's always something more than our story of what's happening. There's always something more beneath the surface of any kind of stuck situation. And just being harsh with ourselves and judgmental often doesn't make any better. So is there another way? Well, again, there is. We can be curious. Find a way of being curious about what's happening under there and stay there a little, see what happens. Focusing is one of many processes that are a bit, you know, there are other ones a bit like it too. Find some way of getting under the story. So that is, yeah, that's where we got to. I would like to end with a bit of quiet and a poem by Rumi. And yeah, the video, I'll send out the link to the video. So, well, it'd be the recording, audio recording.
Does this course require focusing lessons?
Yeah, it requires basics of focusing. So so that would be knowing how to do focusing, knowing how to listen to someone else in focusing. So, you know, typically that takes, you know, a few sessions to learn one-to-one. We can learn it on a course. You know, I often, like in 3 or 4 sessions, it's possible to give the basics. I mean, it's not loads, but it's just the real kind of essence of it can be sort of taught in a one-to-one way. So yeah, but you have to know that, yeah, you do have to know the basics, because we're not teaching from the beginning. We're just kind of teaching as if you know focusing already on this course.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks. Let me just get the, great, there's the here. So yeah, we'll just take a couple of minutes. I'll lead us into a bit of a focusing moment, settling in a little bit, and then I'll just read a poem, and then we'll end there. So yeah, maybe this seminar has stirred something in you. That could be many things, couldn't it? It could be something like yes or no, I don't agree, or yes, I love this. Or fear, or prompts you to worry. So whatever it might have stirred is welcome. And it might, you might feel that physically, like something moving in your body. Or so I'm inviting you to notice whatever's there right now without going into it deeply, just sensing it. It might be bodily, I'd say. It might be in the realm of thoughts or ideas, or just give some space to all of that. You could even imagine like a spacious landscape, in which all of you is welcome, all of the different parts of you. That you might have become aware of just in this process here. And reminding you to sense your whole body as you do that, sense your whole, the container of your whole body. Just like a landscape in itself, really. Sensing the skin and the shape and the posture and that space you take up and everything inside it. And whatever stirred in you, offer an inner welcoming to it. Welcome. You might even just imagine yourself saying, to whatever's in there right now, welcome. Welcome. Even if you don't know it, don't understand it. It may like being welcomed. A guest house. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Welcome and entertain them all. So thanks for joining me tonight. And yeah, feel free to follow up if there's questions that come. Yeah, please get in touch. You can unmute yourself if you like, say goodbye or tap it goodbye. And yeah, see you another time.
Thank you so much, Peter.
Thank you.
It's my first time and the experience was awesome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks.
You're welcome.